Lamon Egg Supply and the Family Vision Center in Greater Downtown Atlantic. This is Bob Evensee along with Brian Smith, the Conservation General Manager for Southwest Iowa. I guess you are the superintendent, supervisor for Southwest Iowa. It's a little hard to get your titles in because you are a captain and there's some good things going. You're doing a heck of a job and you're being recognized for it. So welcome to another program.
I've been called worse by better, Bob.
Okay. Big news up in Northeast Iowa, and that's the ginseng arrest. Bring me up to date on that.
Well, it's getting a lot of, obviously put out a media release, so some of you may have already heard about it, but it was actually right here in just to the east of us in northern Dallas County and southern Boone County. One of our conservation officers, Matt Bruner, was up there, and he was patrolling over Labor Day weekend, and long story short, he checked some individuals coming out of one of our public hunting areas, and they had a lot of illegal ginseng root. They had, I believe he seized 406 or 416 roots. It was 406 roots and all the associated digging hardware. And as people may or may not know, it's illegal to dig ginseng or any other golden seal, bloodroot. It's illegal to take that stuff off of our state owned and state managed wildlife areas, so you can't dig it in our state parks, you can't take it out of our public hunting areas, and it's also the same for most county conservation board owned land. Most of those counties have made it illegal to dig it off there as well. Depending on the year, it can be extremely extremely valuable. I've seen it for going for $600-$700 a pound in the past. A lot of it gets exported to China. At least their in their society, in their folk medicine, it provides a number of medicinal purposes, everything from coping with stress and higher energy levels to being an aphrodisiac and a more natural version of Viagra, if you will. Mm-hmm. So it can bring pretty high prices depending upon the economy in those countries, especially China. And I guess, you know, long and short of it is, anytime you attach monetary value to a natural resource, whether it be turtles that we've talked about in the past or ginseng or whatever it might be, that can lead to that resource being exploited and overexploited. Mm-hmm. And so we've and it's also an endangered species in the United States, and we're only one of 19 states in the United States that allows harvest of it. So we the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service monitors us very closely on how much harvest we allow, and we have to report to them and so on and so forth. So again, it can just be quickly exploited, and that's why we've made it illegal on our state areas to do that.
You bet. There was a reality series on ginseng hunting down in the hills of the Smoky Mountains and this type of thing. That doesn't help. That gets a lot of people's attention into something. So the limit is zero, and then there's a size limit also.
Yes, they're absolutely off of state areas. Now, again, on public land with permission and properly licensed, you can harvest ginseng. There are still some regulations that go with that as far as how old the root must be, and those folks that harvest it know how to age it by the scars and the nodes on it, and or the prongs, as they call them. And it has to be at least a three prong to harvest, otherwise it has to be put back. So there are some restrictions, but again, on private property and properly licensed, you can do that, just not off of our state areas. And they go to our state areas because much of the private land has been, completely extirpated off of that private land from people over harvesting.
Yeah.
So our public areas can serve as a refuge for it, and that's why folks go there to exploit it.
Yep, follow the money. That's the name of the game. Let's change gears and get into some things that are going to, well, either start or end. The teal season ends tomorrow, and let's talk about the kids. They get to go duck hunting and deer hunting in just a week.
Yes, September 17th, 18th for the youth duck season. Again, you know, these early seasons like this, the temperatures are usually pretty pretty reasonable to be out there. In fact, sometimes we're fighting the mosquitoes, but as far as keeping the kids out there and keeping them warm and not freezing their tails off, it's a good time for them to be out there. And this year we've allowed a week break there between the end of the September teal season and the youth duck season, so that hopefully those birds settle down. We get some new birds in throughout the week, and those birds aren't as skittish from being shot at. They've had a week to rest, so it's, you know, again, it's hopefully you can find time to get the young folks out there with everything they got going on with sports and everything else under the sun, and get those youngsters out there and get them on some ducks. And of course, then, like you said, the youth deer season opens, and of course that's same thing, you know, temperatures are good usually, and so
if you take a youngster out on a cold day and they're miserable and wet, and that's the first really feel they get for hunting, they can get sour in a real big hurry.
That's right, and I agree completely, and you know, we still hunt. You can still hunt with young folks. I always just recommend that, you know, once they get cold or once they want to go home, at least I know the young folks I've taken out, if they get cold or they want to go, I pack up your stuff and go, because to force them to stay there doesn't lend itself well either.
Not good at all. Let's talk about the dove season. We're right in the middle of it. It runs on into later on. And what was the success on that?
It was spotty. It depended on where you were at. I got some reports. Of course, again, as you noted earlier, being a supervisor, unfortunately, I don't get out in the field like I used to, but I try and keep up with input from my officers across the district. And it just really seemed like it depended on where you were at. I talked to one officer, Marlo Wilson, down in Fremont County, and for example, he was checking some of his public areas in a ways from the Missouri River down around Randolph, and very few birds. He said hunters might have a half a dozen, maybe at the most, here and there. Then he went a few miles to the west, down in the Missouri River bottoms, and folks had limits. So man, I don't know why one food plot produced better than another one. Mm-hmm. But I also, the supervisor, Greg Harson, up in Northwest Iowa, talked to him. Same thing. He said one food plot would have all kinds of birds, guys that have, or folks that have limits, and the next one they'd just have a handful of birds. So it was spotty, but yeah, those folks that did well had limits.
The food plots are all the same breed, aren't they? The ones that are put in by the DNR.
For the most part, yes. They're, you know, pretty much sunflowers, so again, I don't have an explanation. I talked to another officer. One real interesting thing. He talked to several, shall we say, veteran hunters. They were some older hunters, and I don't remember how many birds he said they had, but he talked to them, and they had three of them, and they had fired around 200 rounds and had a handful of birds, but he said they were just as happy as could be. They were just thrilled that there was a dove season. They were out. They were getting to, you know, shoot their guns, and they were having fun. And when it boils down to it, that's really what it's all about. Not about how many you get, or if you get a limit or what have you. It's about being out there with your friends and enjoying yourselves.
Yeah, my old hunting buddy used to say, if we didn't limit out, he'd say, well, he said, what these birds are costing for each, we just had to quit because we couldn't afford it anymore.
I look at that, you got that much less game to dress as well. Whenever I go fishing, it's always tough because it's a, you know, you want to keep those fish, but then, you know, all the work starts when you get home.
Yeah. Let's talk about fishing since we're into that. Good time of year. The fish are starting to load up on food and getting ready for winter. What would you be doing?
Well, I kind of have a bias. I like my small. Well, I like fishing smallmouth. I also like fishing catfish. But anyway, right now, if I wasn't working, I would I'd probably be over in probably Guthrie County on the Raccoon River fishing smallmouth, and picking up an incidental walleye here and there while I was fishing for smallmouth. Uh-huh. So, you know, like you said, heading into the fall, the fish are putting on the feed bag for the winter. So, in my experiences, you'll find those fish hitting on anything and everything, and you know, it's always amazing. Farm ponds, and you'll have, you know, 8-10 inch bluegill trying to take a 6 inch plastic worm that you're throwing for largemouth. You know, I mean, they're just attacking everything that moves in front of them. So the action can be fast and furious, and it can be a fun time. But of course, as we're moving into the hunting seasons, you see a lot of those folks transition to hunting, and they don't get that fishing in. But it can be fantastic.
Yeah, probably better sitting out there in April freezing to death.
That's true.
According to the DNR newsletter, there was some information in there about catfishing the Missouri. Of course, the Missouri and the Mississippi, both very good, but they were using, said live fish is the best bait, and they were recommending bullhead and sunfish because they will stay alive on the line better. I'm thinking it'd take quite a gutty fish to attack a bullhead. I always managed to get spine pretty good with those things.
Well, they're right. That live bait, especially for those big flatheads, which a lot of those folks over on the Missouri River are targeting, and there's nothing like live bait when it comes to flatheads. And just like the report said, if you look at the guys that really know what they're doing, they're fishing either bullheads or bluegill sunfish, and they do real well. But you're right. I would think it would take a pretty good fish to want to take on a bullhead.
Yeah, I would think so. And finding the bullheads is no easy thing anymore because they're not all that popular and not managed very well for productivity.
Not like it used to be. When I was a kid, that's what everybody started out. You caught bullheads down at the creek.
You bet. Okay, last thing on the list today, roadside counts. The results are in, and not all that bad.
Not all that bad. You know, again, these are our surveys have, I don't want to say been wrong, but they've, you know, in the past, we've had higher counts of what actually turned up on our roadside counts. But yes, they're up, or they're similar to last year, so up over the last several years. And they're saying for a comparison's sake, they would say it's similar to back in, harvest should be similar back in 2007. Mm-hmm. So again, that's a number of years ago that and we've improved. So similar to last year, if you look at the surrounding states around us, Minnesota's up 29%, and then North Dakota, Nebraska, South Dakota are all down anywhere from 10 to 20%, depending on what state you look at. But the really big bright spot has been the quail results. Their quail numbers, this roadside survey, were the highest in the last 27 years.
Amazing.
So that's promising. And just as an aside, I was at a four-state meeting with Nebraska, Kansas, Missouri, and, of course, Iowa conservation officers. And all the states around, or all, those states were also seeing higher quail numbers. And I talked to a captain down in Kansas, and he said, and I guess him to be my age, you know, short of 50 or 50, and he said highest quail numbers he's seen in his lifetime.
Really?
In Kansas. Uh-huh. And I looked it up. Kansas is consistently number three in the nation for quail harvest and quail numbers. So if they're consistently number three across the whole nation and they're the highest he's seen in his entire life, I think that's saying something.
Bodes
so
pretty well.
If you want to get out of the state, you might look at Kansas for some quail hunting.
That's exactly right. A lot of good things to do in the great outdoors. One reminder, be sure you don't fall out of your tree stand as you get into archery. And last year there were three incidents and two serious injuries and one death. And falling out of a tree stand is the number one cause of death amongst the deer hunters. So be very, very careful. For the Lyman Ag Supply and the Family Vision Center in downtown Atlantic, this has been Bob Evensee along with Brian Smith, the Southwest Iowa Supervisor for the DNR, on this morning's Conservation Report.